Singer Declan O'Rourke spoke to us a short time ago about paying tribute to Sinead O'Connor and remembering a story about when he first met her.
I think everybody is in grief, and it's just such a shock. She was such a powerful force and such an example, and just a wonderful human being. So troubled and brave and outspoken, and it's just such a loss. And we all know how poorly she was treated in the media for so long. So my heart goes out to her family and everyone who loved her. And the one time I did meet her and actually speak to her was not as you would expect at all. During my career, it was much earlier. I was a 15-year-old, kind of quiet, shy lad, and I was waiting in the reception of the Parnell School of Music for a guitar lesson, I think on a Saturday morning or something. And there was in that place, there was nobody answering the door, and we all took it in turns opening the door. Anyway, the door rang and I opened it, and she came in with her son, her young son at the time, and they sat down across from me, and it was just us there for a few minutes. I didn't let on. I knew who she was, of course, but you know, I'm sure it was obvious. She made her son offer me some popcorn and started to just, with her beautiful smile, engage me in conversation and ask me all about myself. And she's just exuded kindness and grace. And she was, you know, it was a lovely memory and just a beautiful moment.
That was singer Declan O'Rourke speaking to us a short time ago. Let's speak now to two women about Sinead O'Connor. First, let's talk to Margot Harkin, a film director who directed Sinead O'Connor in her acting debut in the film Hushabye Baby back in 1990. Margot, thanks for taking our call today.
Hello, Gavin. It was 1989. The film was released in 1990. No, it's only a year's difference. We actually worked in 1989, and the film was released in 1990. It was called Hushabye Baby.
Tell me, how are you today?
Oh, I'm so heartbroken. I cannot express it enough. Like so many people, just heartbroken. Declan did a lovely tribute there. Yeah, no. Such a loss. Dreadful, dreadful loss.
Take me back to 1989 then, and tell me about your memories of working with her on that movie.
Yeah, well, the way it happened was I was part of a workshop called Derry Film and Video Workshop, and one of our members, Jim Kern, was really into his music, and we were trying to find someone to compose the music, and he suggested Sinead. I never heard of her. It was early days. And he then showed us some, I presume, videos. I can't even remember what the formats were in those days. And I was blown away by her. And anyway, to cut the story short, we arranged to meet. And she just come back from singing at the Grammys in America and was amazing at that, wearing a little baby girl belonging to Jake, stuck to her jeans, her son, eldest son. And then we met in this little cafe in London, and she was tiny. I just remember just how tiny she was. And Fachnell Kelly was her manager then. And we were asking her to do the music. In the middle of our meeting, she suddenly blurted out if she could have a part in the film. And I says, well, I don't really have a part for a wee bald-headed dairy girl. And we just laughed and left it at that, yeah. And she did do the music, and we worked with her in the studio afterwards. But long before that then, just before we were about to start the production, the filming, I had a character called Sinead. It wasn't written for Sinead. She was called Sinead. And Brona Gallagher, who's also from Derry, was cast on that part. But Brona was still at school. She was actually at St. Mary's. And she had to do resets. She decided she needed to do her O-level resets. So we cast around again and couldn't get anybody. And then we just thought, well, let's try Sinead. And I reduced the part because she was very shy. I had not acted. And she came all the way to Derry and stayed with us. I can't remember how long it was. We either should have 5 weeks, but she wouldn't have been there all the time. But she played one of four young 15-year-old schoolgirls and wore a wig. And she was a delight, an absolute delight. She tried to fit in and had problems with the accent, which was surprising. But she didn't want to, like, she was quite famous already then, she's especially famous in America, but she didn't push that public persona that she had. I mean, she arrived wearing a leather jacket, Sacred Heart icon on it, and the day she left, she shaved her head, and she put the jacket on again. She was back into her persona as Sinead O'Connor, rock star, and off she went again. But we had a lovely time with her. Great memories of working with her, you know.
You worked with her again. It was on a schools programme for Channel 4, isn't that right?
Yes, that's true, yes. A few years later, and it was after the Saturday Night Live episode, she tore up the picture of the Pope. So her life had taken quite a turn already, and it was more difficult this time organising it because she was not particularly well at that time. I think I had this huge realization that fame was not a great thing. Like, it really wasn't something that you should seek. And I think she was pretty tortured by people all the time. And then she'd have that dreadful experience where Joe Pesci and people were, he was saying, you spank her. I mean, what a vile man is he saying that? And Frank Sinatra said that she should get her ass kicked. I mean, she was getting such vitriol from people. But she came up to Derry because it was working with kids. We were composing, showing kids how to compose a track. And actually, some of those children, they're all primary school children aged about 9. One of them later went on to become a singer in Derry, very well known locally, Glenn Rosborough, wonderful singer. So she did have her impact on people. I'm sure every one of them remember her. So she was lovely, but definitely things had changed for her at that stage, you know. So
stay with us, Margot. We're going to go to New York now, and we're going to speak to Alison McCabe, the author of a book called Why Sinead O'Connor Matters. Alison, thank you for staying up for us, and you're very welcome to the News at One. Can I ask you to answer your own question then? Why does Sinead O'Connor matter?
Sinead O'Connor matters because we in the U.S., kind of got stuck, many of us, in 1992 and what happened on SNL. And we missed the bigger message that she was trying to convey then, earlier, and certainly later. I think in the U.S., what a lot of people know about Sinead O'Connor really stops there, and they don't know anything about the music that she made after that, all of her activism, and the space that she opened up for us to have conversations that we should have had decades ago. We could also bring those up now, and that could be part of her legacy, is to talk about racism and sexism, to talk about child abuse, to talk about HIV/AIDS prevention, to talk about issues in the music industry and in the broader culture that are just really, we can't not talk about them anymore. Talking about Sinead O'Connor gives us a chance to do that.
Why did you decide to write a book about her?
Well, I had the chance in 2021 to interview her for a profile that was broadcast here in the States on National Public Radio, coincident with her memoir, Rememberings. And, you know, I'd been prepared to, you know, be delicate, don't ask certain questions, certain things could be triggery. And when I actually encountered her, I found none of that to be true. She was very open, very willing to talk. She wasn't concerned with selling books. She was concerned with talking about the issues that mattered. And my thought was that if we can't separate Sinead O'Connor from SNL, what we can do is bring context to what happened. You know, so your previous guests have been talking, for example, about Joe Pesci, who hosted the show the following week and talked about how if he had been hosting the night that she was on, that he would have grabbed her by the, now he says the word eyebrows because he's trying to make a comment about her hair being cut short, but, you know, after Trump in the U.S., we can imagine him saying another word right there in its place.
I remember reading a review of your book, Alison, where you spoke about, or the Irish Times said that your book didn't fall into the trap of automatic sainthood for all female artists, rightly calling out Madonna and Miley Cyrus's careless and cynical targeting of O'Connor. What was that about?
Yeah. Okay, so I think you're getting exactly where I want to be, which is, you know, it's true that the things that Pesci and Sinatra said were horrible, but they wouldn't have landed if the culture didn't already have these beliefs, not just about Sinead, but about women, you know, that was the cultural context. And I think it also explains why others like Camille Paglia and to some extent Madonna and Miley Cyrus, they all sort of piled on because that was the context. There was really no lane in the U.S. in the music industry for an artist like Sinead, who really saw herself as a protest singer. And so they tried to sort of, you know, refashion her in a way as a pop star with the breakout of Nothing Compares to You. And it was never where she wanted to be. It was never where she belonged. And essentially, it contributed, I think, to what happened with SNL. Prior to SNL, in 1990, she had already faced some backlash for being outspoken. She was accused of censoring the national anthem when she had a concert in New Jersey where it was custom to play the national anthem before the shows, and two people posing as reporters came and asked her about her preferences. And then when she said she preferred not to be played, they ran with it as if she was refusing to perform. There was also an earlier SNL that she was supposed to appear on in 1990 where there was a comedian, Andrew Dice Clay, who was known for misogynistic and homophobic humor. And when she found out he was going to be on the show, she pulled out, but was accused of censoring Andrew Dice Clay. So I think what Sinead experienced in the U.S. was really a reluctance, not just on the specific issue of the tearing of the photograph meant to draw attention to the child abuse crisis, but I think in general there was a resistance to a woman who was outspoken and wanted success on her own terms.
Okay.
And those terms really had nothing to do with commercial success. They had to do with being a voice for others.
Marco Harkin, we heard earlier from people in Bray speaking to Laura Whelan about how loved Sinead was and also about what a superstar she was. And we're hearing Alison talk about the level of cultural influence she had stateside too. What do you think her legacy will be, particularly this side of the world?
Well, I mean, she was a lightning rod for every activist that I knew that was working in Ireland, and there was a huge wave of younger people especially who rallied during the campaign for repeal. I listened to Amy McCann earlier on local radio talking about having gone on a march with her, and she burst through the security at when they reached the Doyle and went in and spent an hour talking to Albert Reynolds. She was so passionate, and I think she had no filters, you know. I mean, most of us do, and she didn't. And so I think she will never be forgotten. I mean, the loss is just incalculable, really.
Marco Harkin,
I'm just thinking we're bereft. Yeah, okay.
My apologies, Marco. We could talk about Sinead for the rest of the day pretty easily, and many people have found it very comforting to listen to her songs and to talk about her over the last day or so here on RTÉ Radio. Margo Harkin, film director, and Alison McCabe, author of Why Sinead O'Connor's Matters in New York. Thank you both very much for speaking to us today.